This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
This is AmTower Off-Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. Every week, author, speaker, consultant Mark AmTower gives you his take on what's going on in the world of government contracting. AmTower Off-Center with your host, Mark AmTower.
Welcome to AmTower Off-Center on WFED, federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Mark AmTower. My guests today, one's a return guest, one's a new guest, Bob Lohfeld of Lohfeld Consulting, and first-timer Lisa Paife, also of Lohfeld Consulting. Welcome, guys.
Hey, thanks, Mark. Good to be here.
Thank you, Mark.
Lisa, let's start with you this time. Give us a little background, please.
Okay, Mark. I'm a principal consultant at Lohfeld Consulting Group. I'm also vice president of the Association of Proposal Management Professionals National Capital Area Chapter.
And
I was recently awarded APMP Fellow by the International Association.
Congratulations. That is
Thank
very
you.
Cool.
Yeah, what's neat about it, too, Lisa's the only person in the United States this year to receive that honor as a fellow of the association.
Yeah, so it's
really
pretty
proud.
Rare.
Yeah, they made three awards this year out of 23 nominations. So it's very exciting.
Putin? Not quite. Robert, and most of my listeners know you, but go ahead.
That's great. Thanks, Mark. I'm Bob Lohfeld, the founder and CEO of Lohfeld Consulting Group, and it's a company that helps government contractors win business in a highly competitive federal market.
And you do so quite well.
Thank you, sir.
Prior to Lohfeld, Bob was in a little company that was bought by Lockheed, and he was made president of a division there and then decided he didn't want to report to other people, so he went out on his own, 10, 11 years ago?
It's, now. Yeah, 11 years. Wow, the time really flies by when you're having fun, I guess.
Doesn't it? Man. All right, so let's talk about winning business here. First of all, boatload of GWACs, it seems like, were awarded recently. It's not a boatload. SOUP finally came through, CIOCS, Alliance recompeting shortly, 8A Stars is opening up. What's changed in the market, and what are companies going to need to do to win?
What's principally changed, and I think everybody knows this, is that the government's budget has been in a steady contraction here for the last 5 years or maybe a little more, depending on how you count it. I was looking at some numbers on budget reductions, and DOD, with the drawdown in the Middle East, their budget is now down 19% from where it was in 2010. The intelligence community has followed a similar trajectory. They're down about 16%. And civilian agencies are doing better. But what has changed principally from that is that what companies did 2 years ago to compete today is not good enough. The competition is much fiercer, and they have basically two options going forward to stay in the game. Either you write better proposals, or you reduce your price, or you do both.
Okay, so you definitely have to step up your game, but not your old game.
It's a new game, and it's being played at a much higher level.
Yeah, I think one of the things that we've discovered through our research is that there's actually a dichotomy between how the government evaluates proposals and how contractors create proposals. And so we benchmark proposals against 7 quality measures, and we've done some research, have a white paper on the topic that proves that using these 7 quality measures as the benchmark for your proposals will actually double your win rates.
Okay.
Would you like to know the 7 measures?
Well, I'd like to know the URL for them so they can get the, is it at lohfeldconsulting.com?
Yes. Also my LinkedIn page.
Okay. Lisa Paife, P-A-F-E.
Mm-hmm.
Very active on LinkedIn and quite good profile. I use it in many of my seminars.
Thank you, Mark. So the 7 quality measures. First, of course, is compliance. We all know that the proposal has to be compliant with the instructions, the SOW, the evaluation criteria, yet you'd be surprised how many proposals fail to even meet this quality measure. Next is responsive. The content has to actually be responsive to what the solicitation is asking. You can't just have the right headings and subheadings and then cut and paste text in. Third is customer focused. Too often we focus on what our offer is rather than what the customer really needs. And the proposal is all about what we want rather than what the customer requires.
Square peg, round hole.
Right, exactly. And then the fourth measure is very important. The proposal needs to be compelling and rich in strengths. And this is something that we advocate, that your proposal be strength-focused. Too often we have proposals that are rich in features but don't clearly state the benefits to the customer. And we don't substantiate those benefits with proof points.
Would proof points in this case be case studies, work where you've done business before?
Yes, actual performance measures you've achieved, efficiencies, cost savings, on schedule, you know,
so
under
it's
budget.
You're incorporating your past performance into the proposal
exactly.
As opposed to letting them find what you want them to find. You're
yes.
putting it in front of them.
Yes, exactly. Okay. And that alone is not sufficient. These benefits have to exceed the requirements in a way that's going to be apparent as a strength to the government. Mm. And that's what we mean by a strength-focused proposal. So we always ask, do your features meet the strength test? And then the next measure, number five, is easy to evaluate. A lot of times we write proposals that are not easy for the evaluator who's going to have a score sheet to score. If they have to search all over your proposal for content that matches their evaluation score sheet, they're going to get frustrated and score you lower. The next measure is good visual appeal. When I open up a proposal, if I just see a big block of dense text, I'm going to be turned off. The proposal has to look appealing through a lot of different best practice methods that you can use to break up the text and use graphics and you know, call out boxes and bolding and things like that. And then finally, well written. So many proposals are poorly written, don't use active tense, and are full of empty words and empty bragging. And that goes back to making sure you substantiate what you're saying with proof points. And in fact, Bob has a great article on this topic. It's called 100 Words That Kill Your Proposal. And I have customers who actually tape that article to the side of their computer monitor. They love it so much.
I think it's seen 38,000 downloads. Last
it's a great article.
Well, it should be an ebook, number one.
It should be.
So articles and ebook. You don't have a book out yet, so this could be your book.
We have actually four books.
Oh, okay.
Now,
so, yeah, but I'm not counting your WashTech articles.
Yeah, you always chide me about sitting in my office and composing a book. And it's on my to-do list.
I've got six or seven out. It's not that hard.
Yeah, you trump me every time.
Yeah. But, you know, what you said right there reflects, and correct me if you did not get this when we were training, it reinforces everything I tell people about their LinkedIn profiles.
Yes, exactly. You
know? With the exception of the compliance, responsive content, customer focus, compelling,
right.
easy to evaluate, visual appeal, and well-written.
Well-written.
You know,
mm-hmm.
And so many people lack that. And one of the reasons I bring that up is that 1102s are all over LinkedIn. There are tons of them out there, and they're using LinkedIn not actively to post stuff, but they're vetting proposals, they're vetting professionals, they're vetting mm-hmm. your subject matter experts, et cetera. So, very cool. So, seven steps. If you didn't get them, download the paper at Lohfeld, Lohfeld consulting.com. Bob, can they get that other article there as well, the 100 words?
They can. It's mm-hmm. on the website.
Did that one run in WashTech too?
Yes, it did.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Download Lohfeld.
If anyone can't find it, just look on the website, find my email address, and send me a note, and I'll forward it to you directly.
There you go. Cool. So, you know, those are the things that make a great proposal. But let's go back to that compliant issue for a moment, because so many people really just churn out stuff, or they buy, and this is not a slam against your product, but they mm-hmm. buy one of those proposal software, fill in the blank things, mm-hmm. and they just, is you know, anything that comes through the chute, they use it, shoot it out.
Right.
They probably don't even edit. Why is that wrong first, and then take a deep dive into the compliance side?
Well, those products may help you churn out a compliant proposal in terms of having the right headings and subheadings, but they really don't help you with making sure that the content is actually compliant and addresses what the RFP is asking for. So I think that those products, I think they work best for if you're selling a product rather than a service and you have the same content that you can reuse over and over again. Mm. But if you need tailored content, those products don't help you much. Mm. And also, I think it's very important that whoever's managing the proposal creates the outline and the template themselves so they fully understand the solicitation.
Okay.
But So the other thing I was going to mention is focusing only on compliance is also the wrong approach. Of course, you have to be compliant, but as I mentioned earlier, we like to put the features you're proposing to the strength test because ultimately you want the government to score your proposal with the most strengths of any bidder and no weaknesses. So okay. People ask, what is a strength? A strength means you are proposing something that increases the likelihood of successful contract performance or exceeds a requirement in a way the government finds beneficial, perhaps provides a value add, and it has to be something only you are offering, because if everyone offers to exceed the requirement in the same way, it won't be a strength.
Right. We're going to take our first break. My guests today are Lisa Pafe and Bob Lohfeld, both of Lohfeld Consulting. You can find them at Lohfeld Consulting, lohfeldconsulting.com. You're listening to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM, and we will be back after this. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guests today are Lisa Pafe and Bob Lohfeld of Lohfeld Consulting. And Bob, I want to start this with beyond being a technical fit for any particular RFP, what are the compelling parts of your proposal that are going to make this thing float?
Mark, we see that question pondered a lot with companies because we'll get calls from them. They say we have an RFP. We can do this work, and we want to bid it. And the first reaction is, well, every bidder can do the work, presumably. That doesn't mean you're going to win the work. And winning begins a long way ahead of the RFP release, and it begins for us through a process we call capture management, which is getting out ahead of the deal and meeting the customer, deeply understanding the customer's mission and objectives and needs and where they're going with the procurement, conceptualizing a solution early on, and then validating that solution with the customer to the extent we can, understanding who we're competing against, because ultimately we have to overtake the competition, building out a teaming strategy and executing that early so we get the best partners on the team, coming up with a compelling win strategy that's feature-rich and builds confidence for us that we'll do a good job, and of course getting the price right. So all of these things precede this effort about doing a proposal. It's not just we can do the work. It's have you done all the preparation to win?
Right. And I think very important to understand that your capture management has to begin with a listening campaign. Capture is really 90% about listening and 10% about talking. So many companies go in and say, well, I went in there. I made a presentation to them. Okay. But did you ask them questions? Did you listen to their response? Did you put forward a proposed solution and see how they react to it? So that's where a lot of companies fail to meet the mark of good capture. And also they fail to understand that there's more than one customer. You can't just go in and make a presentation to the contracting officer. You can't just go in and talk to the program manager. There may be a lot of other people involved in this procurement, whether they're acquisition people, budget people, SMEs. And you need to understand who's going to be part of the source selection committee and who's going to be making the ultimate source selection decision.
That's a great comment, Lisa, because you have to build a constituency around your solution.
Right.
As there's lots of stakeholders in it. Lots of people will be evaluating it and scoring it ultimately.
Okay. So when I want to go back to the features side of this briefly. When I'm talking, you know, I try to help small companies. I do help some small companies mm-hmm. actually differentiate themselves in the market by defining mm-hmm. a true area of expertise. And that seems like part of what you're doing here. Is differentiation important here? Is that part of the capture plan, differentiating yourself from the competition? And if so, what features should they actually emphasize there when it comes to a specific vehicle?
Well, I think one of the things you have to remember is ultimately when it gets to the proposal stage and the government scores the proposal, they're looking for strengths. Strengths are features that, as you say, are differentiators. They're things that the customer really wants and provide benefits beyond just meeting the requirements. So I could offer you the features of a sports car when what you're looking for is a minivan. So you wouldn't care about the features of a sports car. So that's why it goes back to the listening campaign, listening and shaping the procurement so that when you do propose your features, they actually have benefits that the government desires.
The government, the way they evaluate proposals is very prescriptive. It's in mm-hmm. FAR 15305, and it basically says they're going to review your proposal from the point of view of the factors and subfactors that are in the evaluation criteria. And if there's information in the proposal that doesn't relate to those factors or subfactors, it's generally not going to be scored. It's not going to have merit in the final selection. And as they delve into your proposal, reading it, skipping around through the proposal to find information, what they're looking for are features in your proposal that they can identify as evaluation strengths. So they're like auditors going through this beautiful proposal, shredding it, marking it up, and all that survives is basically a PowerPoint briefing to the source selection official that says, here's the bid from the ABC company, here's the evaluation factor number one, they had three strengths and this is it, make a selection. So all of the work that goes into that proposal is really there to give the government the information they need to make a great briefing to the source selection official.
And to highlight that criteria that they're searching on to begin with.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
So, all right. So let's migrate. So I'm a $100 million company. I'm cranking out proposals. I'm treading water because I'm only winning maybe 15-20%. Mm-hmm. But I've got software that cranks them out for me, so I don't really care. I'm not spending money. What's the value of bringing in a consultant to help with this, an experienced proposal consultant? And how do they find them?
Well, I think if you really want to get your money's worth with regard to a consultant, you want to look for a consultant who is a thought leader, because there are plenty of consultants who can come in and produce a proposal if that's all you care about. But how many consultants can actually come in and produce a win? And that should really be what you're looking for when you go out and look for a consultant, someone who has a proven track record of wins and who's a thought leader on the topics that we've just been discussing today.
I think about in an academic sense, when we were all in school, we had to write term papers and every student in the class had to write one. And regrettably, the professor had to read them. And most of them are really pretty terrible. Mm-hmm. And occasionally you find one that's really great. And proposals are the same way. Most of them are pretty mediocre. Anybody can write a proposal. It's just only a few folks can really write a great one.
You know that, like, 35 years ago, I taught English in college.
I didn't know.
So you know. You know then.
Yeah. And when you flunk football players, the team shows up en masse. So,
the other thing I think companies should look for in a great consultant is someone who is going to ask them tough questions, who's not going to just come in and say, okay, yes, I'll just produce this proposal for you. They're going to actually ask them questions. Why do you think you should win this? You know, what's your P win? Someone who's going to play devil's advocate during the review process and actually ask questions that go to the strengths and weaknesses of the proposal.
Okay.
Yeah, there's a big payoff, particularly for the mid-tier players. I think a lot of them get in this routine where they are pushing out one proposal after another, and the objective becomes to push the proposal mm-hmm. out and get it delivered on time. And they lose sight of the fact that the real objective is to create a winning proposal every time you go. And some outside inspiration, some vision, some guidance, some mentorship can really be transformative for these companies. They need to see what a great proposal looks like. They need to feel it and internalize it, and that'll change the game.
Well, you need to write a paper that's the criteria on selecting a proposal consultant, because 2013 was the year of the layoff of the BD professional. 2014 was the year of the layoff of the bid and proposal shop. 2015 is the year of what the hell did we do? We need these people.
Who's going to write the proposal now that they're all gone?
Yeah. Bring back that person. No, what, yeah. They're charging four times as much now?
Yeah, that's sort of what Lisa was referring to, too. There were a lot of displaced workers in this industry, the government contractor industry, that finding they had no job with their employer, the first thing they do, we don't have unemployment in this industry. You're either working or you're a wannabe consultant. So everybody goes out, prints a business card.
I've been a consultant for 31 years. I kind of understand that at this point.
Yeah, so a lot of people running around doing what we call AFM. It's anything for money, and they'll write your proposal for you, too.
Yeah, I don't do the AFM. I know my strengths, and if somebody comes to me for something, if somebody comes to me and says, help me write a proposal, I'm going, I've got these friends that might be able to help you, but that's not what I do.
Yeah.
My kind of writing will not win proposals. It might piss off some 1102s, let's talk about that consultant role. When you go into a shop and you start to review their processes, and you think the machine is broken, how do you tell people that?
It's interesting you ask that, because I actually have in my toolkit a 1-week review that I do. I go into the customer shop and I do a mixture of documentation review, interviews, focus groups. And I compare their processes, tools, technology, people to best practices. And I review a sample proposal or two against our 7 quality measures. Mm-hmm. And then I give them a briefing on what I think they need to do to improve people, processes, technology. And you know what? What's interesting to me is usually I'm telling them things that they actually already know in their hearts, but have been afraid to put on paper. And the second interesting thing is that a lot of them don't, even though they agree and understand with the recommendations, they have a lot of trouble implementing them, because it is very hard to change.
It's different. It's not how we do things.
Right, exactly.
So I've had companies tell me, once I explain how the government buys, they say, well, that's not how we do business.
Exactly.
And my answer is real simple. Then don't come into the market.
Yes, or they'll tell you, we're too busy to do that. You're too busy to improve. You're too busy to win.
So on occasion, I've been brought in to say what lower-level employees have been telling management. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, management pays attention.
Exactly.
I mean, I love the gigs, but I'm thinking to myself, how stupid are you? Your employees have been saying this for 18, 24 months. Mm-hmm. But now that I say it, it's, oh, gosh, why didn't we know this before?
Yeah, sometimes it takes an outside person, because they're perceived as unbiased. And that's fine. I think it's just equally important for the company to make a commitment that once they hear these recommendations, they take actionable next steps.
And to get that transformation to occur, the senior executive team has to buy into it. They're the ones that scuttle the process by working around it. And they have to embrace the idea. They have to be the ones driving that transformation. And when they get on board, they can do wonderful things with their organization. But they have to be a player in it. They have to be a stakeholder in it.
Yeah. I mean, that was what was cool about working with you guys on the LinkedIn training. You were the one that brought me in.
Yeah.
And we had, just a wonderful day of training. But when I'm doing training for other companies, even if it gets recorded in webinars for reuse, executives rarely actually look at it. And if they adopted LinkedIn themselves, organizationally, they would be leaps and bounds beyond many of their competitors.
And what we learned from you in the social media space is now part of our DNA, I think, and
yes,
our
definitely.
Go-to-market strategy.
Oh, your visibility online overall is huge. I've been tracking your web traffic on Alexa, so yes, it is. We're going to take a break. My guests today are Lisa Pafe and Bob Blofeld of Blofeld Consulting. I'm Mark Amtower, and you're listening to Amtower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back to Amtower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Mark Amtower. My guests are Bob Lohfeld and Lisa Paif, both of Lohfeld Consulting. We've been talking about some of their articles and white papers. You can find those at lohfeldconsulting.com, L-O-H-F-E-L-D, consulting.com. The bottom line here for reaching out and or internally or externally, whoever's doing your capture side, what can companies do to raise their win rate?
There's probably five things that companies do that have a good sustainable win rate, and we see those attributes characterized this way. The first is that they have good people working capture, working proposals. They can be their own internal staff or their staff augmented by consultants. But all in all, this is an intellectual game, and smart people will play it better than those who aren't so gifted in that area. So the right people is really important. They have a process that is effective and efficient, and they're disciplined to execute against that process. And the process begins with capture and drives all the way through the proposal. So they have a good process. They have some good underpinning technology that helps them enforce the process, drives the variability out of execution of the process, and makes it more efficient, lets them reuse artifacts along the way so that they can push more deal flow through. So that's three. The fourth is they have to have a good pipeline. And a lot of companies we see have what I'd call an anemic pipeline. It's not rich with opportunities. They don't have a lot of deals out there that are qualified. And because they don't, They get in this trap where they make poor bid decisions. They don't call out deals that they shouldn't bid, and that's hugely detrimental to their business, which brings up the fifth area, and that's management decision making. The desperation that says we have to bid something. We've got people sitting here on their hands with nothing to do. Let's bid this, even though we don't know the customer, we don't know the competition, we don't have a solution, and all these factors are looming large out there that say this is one you should pass, they go ahead and bid anyway. So five factors.
Yeah, so true, Bob. I see that poor decision-making every day. And it's not just one decision. It should be multiple decisions. You're going to make an initial decision, yes, this is an opportunity we want to explore and see if we can get in and talk to the customer. We're going to do a SWOT analysis, us versus the competition. Then we're going to make another decision. Is this an opportunity that we should continue pursuing? Can we get there? Can we get to the point that we're all strengths and no weaknesses? And so you're going to, if the answer is yes, you're going to continue with your capture. You're going to have another gate review when the RFP comes out. Did our shaping work? Is this procurement as expected? Or do the evaluation factors actually favor other bidders? If so, okay, yes, we may have spent some BMP dollars thus far, but we're going to no bid it now because this RFP is not what we expected, not what we tried to shape. So there are multiple decisions. And I think another decision that fails to be made so often is the final review, which is post-submission. Everyone knows that you should ask for a customer debrief, and most of us do that, win or lose. But you should also hold an internal lessons learned, whether you win or lose, and say what worked and what didn't, and characterize that and put it into your knowledge base for review next time you go after a similar bid or another bid with the same customer.
It's great that you mentioned a knowledge base, because most companies don't have one. They don't have a good one if they do. And things like customer debriefs end up on someone's C drive, mm-hmm. and 2 years later you can't find it or the person's gone from the firm. So creating this institutional framework for executing capture and proposals becomes really the core of the economic engine that drives companies forward. And there's software in the market that lets companies build this knowledge-based system and drive the business development capture and proposal process through it. So without trying to make a plug, we have such a software product that we sell to, the larger small businesses up through the very largest companies in the market. And there's other firms out there that do as well.
Okay. And it also, the thing about having a tool like that is it helps you institutionalize the various decisions that you have to make And it also helps you to make the lessons learned review part of your processes. So when you start a new capture effort, you go back and review those lessons learned.
And we see people doing that. It's very effective to say the last three times we worked to bid a deal for this customer, here's what we learned from it, and brief that to the capture team. So they start, they get a running start with all the benefit of the lessons learned from last time.
Okay. I want to migrate to a recent favorite topic of mine. I had Joanne Wojtek on the show. I had Rob Cohn on the show. If you don't recognize those names, the likelihood is you don't own a GWAC. I'm going to have the people from Alion on shortly. and I'll be looking for some other GWAC managers, program managers from GWACs to interview. But what's the importance of the overall importance of the GWACs as far as your go-to-market strategy is concerned?
I think that GWACs, IDIQs, other multiple award vehicles are extremely important in today's market. The government is really trending towards using these vehicles because it's more cost-effective and efficient for them to do so rather than making single award type procurements. So we're seeing fewer and fewer large procurements just in and of themselves and more of these multiple award vehicles. And as we're approaching the fourth quarter, you know, you really have to have these vehicles if you want to win some work in the fourth quarter, because contracting officers push work out onto these vehicles a lot in the fourth quarter because it's the easiest way to get rid of their pipeline of demand. But I think one of the things I've found is a lot of times companies say, oh gosh, I've got to get on this GWAC or IDIQ. I've got to do it. They're going to make a lot of awards. I'm going to bid it. The fact that the government is going to make a lot of awards on a GWAC or an IDIQ is not necessarily a good thing. You could spend a lot of BMP dollars winning the GWAC or IDIQ, but because you don't understand this vehicle, it becomes an empty vehicle and you win no task orders. So I think it's very important to win GWACs and IDIQs, but to win the right ones that are actually going to be a fit for your company.
Well, let me ask a question on that based on your experience. Once upon a time, you worked for an 8A.
Yes.
You were a winner, probably responsible for winning 8A Stars, iteration one. My research shows that the vast majority of companies on Stars 1, there were 599 winners, vast majority made zero. That wasn't the case with your company.
No, I was working for an 8A called Ace Info Solutions. They very successfully graduated the 8A program, and now they're a mid-tier company. But the thing was that we understood how to use that particular GWAC. You don't just win the GWAC and then sit back, okay, gee, what RFPs are going to come out on this GWAC? You work the GWAC. You go and market the GWAC to your customers and say, guess what? There's this great vehicle. It's economical for you to use. It's very efficient. You can make awards quickly. It's got great companies on the vehicle, including us. You want to use this vehicle. It's perfect. You're going to get 8A credit. You're going to get small business credit. And you bring work to the vehicle. If you just sit back and wait for the task order RFPs to drop, you're not going to win any business. The key to a GWAC or an IDIQ is bringing work to the vehicle and pre-marketing the work.
It'd be really interesting for some companies to put data together on this idea of pre-marketing the task requests and look at their win rate and say, for the deals where we pre-marketed, we talked to the customer, we helped convince them to use the vehicle, what's our win rate? And I'm going to guess it's 60% or so. And if they play this game called jump ball, here's a task request. We don't know anything about it, but let's bid it. I think the win rate's probably 10 or 15% because most of the deals aren't fair deals.
Yeah. Now, there are some companies that use an approach where they bid every single request that comes out on the GWAC, and sure, they'll win some percentage of them. But the best approach for a GWAC, a government-wide vehicle, is to bring your customers for a vehicle. The best approach for agency-specific IDIQ is that you know the agency and the customers, and you have people on your team who have incumbent work that can be brought to that IDIQ.
Right. We're going to take a break, our last break. My guests today are Bob Lohfeld and Lisa Paife of Lohfeld Consulting. I'm Mark Amtower, and you're listening to Amtower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Back after this. Welcome back to Amtower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I am Mark Amtower because nobody else volunteered. My guests are Bob Lohfeld and Lisa Paife of Lohfeld Consulting, and we're on to GWACs. These things have grown truly in magnitude and importance throughout the market. You know, the recent award of SOUP 5, CIOCS, the latest iteration of the ECS contracts out of NIH and the NITAC office, Alliant, the 8A Stars open mm-hmm. season, and more. So, Bob, you got some stats on these things.
I do, Mark, and there's no question that the GWACs have become the darling of the IT industry for sure. When we look at spend data on GWACs, and these are government-wide acquisition contracts, over the past 5 years, the spend on GWACs has grown by 20%, and that's a huge upward trend, given that the overall market is contracting. There's also other vehicles that are important, though, when a company lays out its strategy, and it should think about it in perhaps four parts. There's a need to have GSA schedules in place. Schedule 70 is a workhorse of our industry, and it ebbs and flows in popularity, but it still pulls.
It's maybe, definitely there.
Yeah, $9 billion a year flows through that schedule, give or take a billion on a good year or not such a good year. Agency IDIQ contracts, like a GWAC, but they're constrained to just the procuring agency. They're not used government-wide. Those vehicles are up 15% in spend over the last 5 years. And then as a fourth part of the strategy, you have to be prepared to compete in other competitive competitions like full and open, or maybe if you're a small business, you have to compete inside of a small business set-aside procurements. But you have to have the ability to create a great proposal in those environments and win. So four elements to the strategy: schedules, IDIQ contracts, GWACs, and then full and open competitions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'd like to touch for a moment on agency-specific IDIQs, because I think that these can be very, very lucrative for companies if they take them seriously and approach them correctly. An agency-specific IDIQ, you have to, of course, know the agency and know the customers within that agency that would be using this IDIQ, and/or you know, fill out your team with teammates who have incumbent work with that particular agency. And you need to find out, is the agency going to require its customers within the agency to use this vehicle? For example, NOAA-Link, which is coming up for refresh right now.
Give people an idea of the scope of NOAA-Link.
NOAA-Link is an IDIQ that was issued about 5 years ago in the 8A and small business space for all IT work at NOAA. All IT work.
8A and small biz.
Yes. They never.
Hello.
And they never awarded the full and open, even though full and open bid. So all IT work had to go through NOAA-Link, and that's what's coming up for refresh right now. SB is out on the street, and 8A will be out on the street shortly. Now, last time, and you know, I think NOAA will follow a similar approach, they made five awards in each space, 8A and small business. So let's say you had the 8A or small business.
Let's emphasize that point. Five as in one, two, three, mm-hmm. four, five.
That's opposed to a GWAC that might have 75 companies on it.
Or 100.
Or 100, right. So if you know that you can get in ahead, you know, on this vehicle, and you know the customer, you and your teammates have some incumbent work, and you know you're only going to have four competitors every time you bid, this is something you can expend resources on. I mean, I would recommend if this type of IDIQ, you have a dedicated capture manager who's working with the team to make sure you are bidding each and every RFP that comes out, because why not in that case? You know, because it's a limited
right.
field. So in that case, you want to really devote resources to it and set up what a lot in the industry call a task order factory, which, you know, isn't a sweatshop, but what it is a streamlined approach to the task orders, where you have all the tools and templates and technology in place to rapidly disseminate the requests for proposals to your teammate and internal staff, make the quick go, no-go decisions, pull out your templates and, you know, easily tailorable materials, sit down in your war room, because a lot of these are quick turnaround, especially on these agency-specific ones. They might be 1 week or 2 week turnarounds, and churn out these RFPs with iterative review processes and submit them and have good lessons learned afterwards so you can keep improving and improving and hopefully maintaining a decent win rate.
And NOAA has a fairly decent budget.
Yes, they do. They have a lot of technology needs.
So another, I don't know if they have any, I'm assuming they do, CMS has a boatload of money and they love small business.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of good opportunities, and companies that want to embrace this strategy should do some fundamental market research to look at the agencies that they serve, look at the vehicles that those agencies use, and there's lots of great data out there that you can get on the usage of vehicle, tasks awarded, mm-hmm. all of that rich repository of information is available. And you can go through it and look at the vehicles in terms of popularity. You can look at them in terms of when they expire and are recompeted, or if there's an on-ramp to the vehicles. And you can lay that all out and say, here's our strategy to become a dominant player in this agency, in this segment of the market. Here's the vehicles that we have to win. And it becomes so crystal clear where you need to put your energy, how you need to move forward to lay that foundation that will make you a successful business.
Okay. Give me some final thoughts here, please. How should companies proceed, especially those without a tremendously strong win rate history?
I think it really goes to working smarter, not working more. As Bob alluded to earlier, you don't just want to be writing tons of proposals with poor decision-making, making bad bid decisions. You really want to do your homework and research as to the best vehicles, because as we've discussed, vehicles are king right now. Which GWACs, which IDIQs make the most sense for us to go after and devote resources to and do the capture work on?
I think it's really important for companies to be on a crusade to understand what constitutes a great proposal, because the game is highly competitive. If you roll the clock back, eight years ago or 6 years ago, the government was spending money hand over fist trying to become the economic stimulus for the nation. And that rising tide sort of floated all contractors, whether they were particularly good or not. They all benefited from it. But that tide has now ebbed, and only the strongest will survive. And they will be the ones that are the best, brightest, most committed players in the market. There's going to be a lot of companies that go away or become greatly diminished with the new realities in the market.
My final question would be then, after you win, get a position on either an agency, IDIQ, or a government-wide vehicle, how big a role does that marketing play?
For the agency vehicles, it's huge. The companies that are out there, as we say, walking the halls, understanding what's coming and encouraging and facilitating the use of those vehicles will be the ones that are most successful. And we see that in some vehicles where one company will end up with 80% of the work. They got it because they were ahead of the other recipients of the mm-hmm. contract, and they worked every deal. They knew it. They understood the customer needs, and they write great proposals in a short period of time.
Yeah, and then on the other side are the GWACs, where if you want to be successful, you have to be out there marketing that vehicle to your customers at all agencies and bringing work to the vehicle.
There you go. Bob, Lisa, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mark.
Greatly appreciated. This is not my day job, Amtower and Company, i.e. me. I advise companies on all aspects of marketing to the government. I advise many companies on leveraging LinkedIn and the official launch of the Government Market Master Continuing Professional Education Program is July 8th with our session on LinkedIn for GovCon. Thank you very much for listening to Amtower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
You've been listening to Amtower Off Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Amtower Off Center, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.